It is Saturday, November 8th, 2014. We are broadcasting live from Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is KUSP Public Radio, 88.9 and KUSP.org. And it's time now for Geek Speak. So good. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. Please keep in mind that the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP or any of the geeks affiliated organizations. And hello. I'm Bonnie Jean Primsch in the host chair today, and with me in the studio is Ben Jaffe, a teacher, traveler, and music geek.
Hello.
Also, Miles Elam, a software engineer and political junkie.
Good morning.
Guten Morgen. And Lyle Choxel, a photographer, programmer, and father.
Good morning.
Speaking of relationships, today's show is dedicated to Tom Magliazzi, who hosted Car Talk along with his brother Ray for years and years and years. My understanding is that Car Talk airs after this show, and we're told today's will be a memorial episode, so stay tuned for that.
Definite car geeks.
Definite car geeks, Tom and Ray, and kind of set the scene for shows such as ours.
Yeah, I would say.
Getting around to talk about all things geeky. And we're going to do that now. Ben, the bats have been jamming some signals.
What? The bats have been, yeah, yeah.
I or read are these this. Are these signals that can jam bats?
That's the question.
That's I'm
yeah. Confused. I read this, and of course the title
Ooh,
was
bat jam. Yeah,
like bat guano.
The title was "Holy Blocked Bat Signal," which didn't give me much information.
No.
And then it follows up to say bats jam each other's calls.
What? Ah.
Bats are jamming each other. Not humans jamming bats or I don't know what else.
So bats
Batman
communicate
or,
by that whole sonar thing.
They find...
They locate.
They locate.
Sorry.
Exactly.
Meant, yeah.
So they can avoid crashing into walls this way by making little clicks and listening to the bouncing of their clicks.
So they are also, they jamming each other's signals so they can pay attention to their own, or are they making it possible for other bats to just bump into things?
I like the second one. It's not the second one. Like,
I just made Jimmy run into the wall again.
Exactly. No, this is actually so that way bats can steal each other's food. So they use the echolocation not just to avoid running into walls, but also to find where the flies are.
Uh-huh.
Because the sound will bounce off the fly, and then they'll hear it, and then they'll know where the fly is. So just before they eat the insect, as they're approaching it, they do a rapid series of of ultrasonic calls, and then they listen to those echoes, so that way they can track exactly where it is as they're approaching, so they can get it in their mouths. And then another bat comes along and is like, and confuses the other bat. The first bat goes and flies off in the wrong direction, misses the food. The second bat gets it.
So my question is, in sending off these little just before I eat the fly signals, are they at the same time locating the fly from themselves and messing up other bats' ability to find the fly, or is that a separate signal?
See, that I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure exactly how that works, but... Yeah. Probably they can, I mean, my guess would be that they can hear a bat about to eat something and then decide to, you know, screw with them.
Then be like, uh-uh.
Oh, it's over there.
Did you hear a knock at the door? Take a bite out of the sandwich.
Look over there.
What are you guys referencing? I'm completely lost. You know what? Don't answer that.
We're just amusing ourselves.
Former housemate of mine who was from the East Coast. I think it's the East Coast thing. I'm just like... Hey, what's that over there? They go off to do something and like take a huge bite out of the grilled cheese sandwich and put it back on the plate. So the other person walks back and they see the
Where's
bite.
My sandwich?
Hey.
That sounds like horrible roommates.
And I say, why did you do that? I ate the sandwich. What? But why? Because I was able to take their food.
So you're saying you lived with a bat. I didn't even notice. That's exactly what they do.
What's happening?
Yeah, shout out to you, Moses.
Yeah, all right.
Well, I thought that was the coolest.
That
Sorry.
Is pretty cool. I think, speaking of things that move rapidly, YouTube apparently is going to be going faster. What's this 60 FPS, 60 frames per second thing that YouTube's doing?
Or earlier, so when we were talking before, you were like, 60 feet per second audio? What?
I didn't understand how something digital could be measured in feet per second, and then I realized it was frames per second.
And then everyone made fun of me because I'm too young to know what feet per second means and with regard to audio.
No, but Bonnie and I just said it wasn't feet per second, really. Yeah. You just talked about time and length. You wouldn't say per second. You would say it's a certain amount. I don't even know how fast the reel-to-reels went that we learned how to edit audio, but time definitely had a length.
Would it have been meters per second over?
No. It was like, I need to cut out this 14 minutes of useless banter, and then you'd have a whole long piece of tape you'd throw on the ground.
It's like editing the show.
It's a lot like that.
So 60 FPS.
Bonnie, thank you for editing the show, by the way.
Happy to help.
So 60 FPS, frames per second, right? So if you go on YouTube right now, you'll see generally 30 frames per second, and that's usually also what you'll see on television. That's what you'll see just in general. You'll see 60 frames per second for video.
Do you know why we see 30 frames per second of television in the United States?
I used to know this too.
Dun, 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 dun.
What is 60 cycles per second of electricity? AC is 60 cycles, so you double that for interlacing, or you have that for interlacing, and you get 30 frames per second.
So you get 30i. Or, I'm sorry.
But in any case, that legacy is going to run for a while. Traditional film is 24 frames per second, that look that people like.
Yeah, and actually that's something that always amuses me, is that people will look at 30 frames per second video or higher and be like, it doesn't look like film. Mm-hmm. And what they're saying is, this sucks because it has too much temporal resolution. It has too much quality time-wise.
Yeah. When the Hobbit movie came out, that was the first one to do 60 frames per second.
I think they did 120 or something.
Yeah, it was 120.
Oh, my mistake. It's
more frames per second than we require, frankly.
I can process.
Yeah, I don't understand this. Like the retinal screens and the more frames per second than your eye can even really process.
Well,
that's
not true. I have seen before animations done where they were at 120 frames.
I would
per
say there's a lot
60.
Of frames in that movie, in the first Hobbit movie, that didn't need to be there. The whole underground chase
yeah,
scene,
sure,
that was
sure,
too
sure.
many frames. You could have pulled that out and averaged it, and you would have gotten less frames per second. With the better milk. So, and I haven't seen the second one. Oh, it's so depressing.
Anyway, so back to the story. 4 months ago, YouTube promised that they would support 60 frames per second. And actually, a lot of the people who are driving this, who are asking for this, are gamers. Because with games, that extra little bit of time resolution really matters, right? Mm-hmm. So what they have a soft launch, basically, and now you can select on some videos that are more motion intensive, as deemed by YouTube, 720p or 1020p at 60 frames per second.
Wow, that's a lot of data.
That's a lot of data. That's HD and high frame rates.
Now, what we're talking about, of course, is that you record that amount of frames per second, and then you play it back, and so the time is still in sync. You can also record more frames per second and play back at the standard frames per second, and then it's a slow motion film. The iPhone 5 supports that, right?
Yes.
So there's a little complication about frames per second versus recording versus playback determines your actual experience of time.
Yeah, so for example, you could have a slow motion camera that might record at 10,000 frames per second.
I want one.
Yeah, I want one of those too. But then when you play it back, you play it back at 30 frames per second.
Oh, I see. That's to capture the really high quality slow-mo. Mm.
Yeah, and you end up with a really...
Bullets going
really
through apples and the like.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, our Canadian geek Greg says that The Hobbit was actually 48 frames per second.
Good to know. Thank you very much.
It was more than that. My memory is failing me. Anyway, so YouTube also says that they are retaining control over what videos will be able to appear at 60 frames per second. They say it'll only be enabled for, quote, motion-intense videos. So this article says, so your average vlog or cat video is unlikely to qualify. But I just found the most amazing subreddit, reddit.com/r/startledcats. And it is the most...
This is on the same subject, right, Ben?
This is that short YouTube launches thing.
Is going where I think it's going, Ben, you're fired. Cats on the internet, really?
Your volunteer thing that you do every week. You will no longer
you're getting a pay cut.
No,
tell us about the surprise startled cats.
Why is that related to home
from work, and so generally I don't I don't indulge in another being's suffering, but most of these cats startled themselves. Like, they'll be sitting
so bad. Most of the time, personal. I don't like the suffering of animals, but let me go on.
But they're okay, so like one of them, they're usually animated GIFs. One of them is this cat just sitting on a counter, and there's an empty water bottle, like plastic water bottle behind it, and it's wagging its tail, and then its tail knocks over the water bottle, and it just, you know, pew, shoots off because it hears the water bottle system. It's just, they're so funny.
Can also, we have a whole show of describing cat videos online?
You know what we'll do is we'll link to the
show. Number one.
I will put it on,
we'll put it on Geek
the show page. So go to geekspeak.org.
Wait, hold on. I'm sorry. Wait, I'm sorry. I just want to be on record here. I am not okay with Geekspeak furthering the cat videos on the internet.
Why I'll not? Say, they're cute. They're the best thing. What about Box Cat? He's got a little friend now.
When I get home.
Can we talk about anything else, please?
When I get home and I'm stressed, that de-stresses me. Okay. It works. So check it out.
All right.
If you
I still don't understand how that related to frames per second.
Well, because the article says your average vlog or cat video is unlikely to qualify. But startled cats, they move fast. You want that extra frames per second.
Oh, I see. To really capture all the startling.
Catcher? Did you say catcher?
I said catcher. That's right.
Hey, Ben, do you have a cat at home?
I don't. Okay. I'm allergic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
Miles is allergic to this topic.
Yeah, you want your extra frames per second to see the cat move
faster. Yeah.
Slower.
No, faster. No,
hey, let's talk about math, Miles.
Moving on.
Anyway. Slower, okay. Let's talk about math. That's much more interesting than this.
So what's this? This math is now proving the universe? What's happening?
Well, there was something that's come up both from a philosophical point of view.
Yeah.
Was how could the universe come from nothing?
Yeah, that's puzzled me for years.
Right. You had the Big Bang, and it was just the universe wasn't there, and then suddenly it was there.
Yeah.
And how does that work?
That's weird.
Or bang, well, I should say.
There's actually a mathematical proof that has been put forth that the universe could form spontaneously from nothing, from a quantum foam. As it
a quantum be. Foam?
Quantum fluctuations.
Oh. Can now, you say more about that?
I don't know, per se, like how much this this proof has been vetted. It has just been proposed right now. But at the same time, mathematical proofs are different from you just write something down and say, hey, this is...
Yeah, it's
not
just...
It's different from a logical deduction.
Here's my pet theory that I thought up because I had a dream last night. Or you know, like yeah. It's actually based in something.
Yeah, it's along the lines of... Like, if I have an odd number and I add an even number to it, it will always be odd. There's a mathematical proof that describes that, and
oh, that's true.
A fundamental truth of the universe. Like,
yeah.
You just can't – it's ineffable.
So assuming that they did their math right, then this proof
right.
is
so
not really
– Are we at the yeah. first draft stage or what? Someone just filled up a few chalkboards?
So you have this these quantum fluctuations, and they would have these – tiny bubbles. I'm not going to do this justice. And normally they would just collapse upon themselves. The nature, they're very unstable. They would just
okay
collapse upon themselves.
Oh, but so
but
somebody
if they
went...
reach a certain size, they uh-huh. reach a certain threshold, then they have the ability to get a explosive expansion
okay.
and just keep going.
So if they
like
can survive that initial bloop, then they can go kaboom.
Yes.
Okay, I get it. And so someone's proving that with meth.
Yes.
Hey, kids, go into meth.
Which, of course, is, you know, math, which means it's this theoretical framework is very esoteric.
Yeah.
It sometimes translating that into the real physical world is a different thing. But with regard to
at least
a logical progression, it is possible.
Okay. Well, there it is. Take that, people who believe otherwise.
Cool. I don't know what to say to that, Bonnie.
Take that, people who think you can add an even number to an odd number and get something even.
Yeah. Hey, how about this, guys? Why don't we collect ourselves and try to get this show focused? And hey, how about this? You could listen to the 7th Avenue Project here on KUSP. Next up tomorrow at noon, if your genome is a garden, it's got some serious weed issues, man. Some bits of DNA have figured out how to copy and spread themselves and now make up about half of our genetic material. Other genes are trying to hold them back. And the ongoing genetic arms race may help fuel evolution. the story of jumping genes with genomics researcher Sophia Salama on the next 7th Avenue Project. That's Thinking Persons Radio with Robert Pauly, and you can hear it tomorrow at noon on KUSP, and you can also check out his website at 7thAvenueProject.com. Right now you're listening to Geek Speak, and you can find us at geekspeak.com. I'm Bonnie Jean Finch in the host chair. I'm sorry, .org. What's wrong with
our
brain?
We're a nonprofit.
Donut brain. Jeez. Okay,
that was the
coolest. Geekspeak.org. Bonnie Jean Finch here in the room with Lyle Troxell, Ben Jaffe, Miles Elam, and our Saturday brains on.
That was a really cool promo.
Robert's
show is amazing.
It's an amazing show.
I have to listen to that show.
I think I say that every week. You know, I say this a lot when we have a chance, but I had a chance to talk with Robert this week. I was at a party with him, and then I wanted to take a look at his numbers and how many people are listening. Not enough people actually listen to the show, because more people should be listening to Robert's show than Geek Speak.
You guys got it all wrong, you listeners.
Got it all wrong. Robert's show is a very thoughtful discussion with really intelligent people. He edits it clean. Mm-hmm. He provides a longer link on the podcast, the shorter versions on air, but it's always a good show. I mean, he's just really good at it. So it's, now that I've said that, so heartfelt, it's 7thAvenueProject.com. Mm-hmm. You're going to get to, of course, from KUSP, but 7 is a number 7. And the rest is just one word, 7th Avenue Project. Yeah. We'll link to it from GeekSpeak. In fact, it's one of our main links at geekspeak.org. So there you go.
So one way or another, you should be able to find that show and do something nice for your ears.
That's right. And if you're going to geekspeak.org, you can take a look at our crazy titles inspired by show topics. Mm-hmm. So, for example, the October 25th episode of GeekSpeak was called, what is it? Tesla's High Pressure Ads Fall from Space.
Right.
Now, what? You were on that show, Miles. Or Ben, rather.
I was on that show?
Yes.
Yeah. See, that title doesn't tell me anything.
That's the thing. But it's composed of each of the different topics that we talked about today.
Yes.
That
yeah.
day. And one of the things that we talked about that day there's different names for this. The cookies that follow you wherever you go on mobile devices.
Right. Verizon was kind of outed recently for injecting some stuff into the headers of HTTP requests. And we covered that really well in the 25th show. So go listen to that show if you want to talk about how that works and what were they doing and all that. But what I want to clarify is that we weren't sure about how many providers were doing it. Now it looks like Verizon's doing this and AT&T is doing this. They're doing it on their mobile networks. Mm-hmm. They're injecting information in the headers of your contact or of your information to the server. Mm-hmm. It only happens when you're using non-SSL. So if you're using HTTPS, they can't get into that packet. So try to use secure connections more. And then additionally, if you're really concerned about this, you could go and find some provider of VPN services, this is virtual private network service, and you can actually show up on different points in the internet. And when you do that, you're tunneling your entire communications protocol through another company using encryption, and therefore no one can inject stuff in. You do have to trust the second company.
So it's like a little protective sheath.
It is a bit. So it's one of those reasons VPN can be useful. It's also useful if you want to like look what it looks like to look at Google from like France or something. You could open a VPN connection from your house and then go to and show up in France, and assuming you set your languages to French, you'd have experience like somebody would have in France and removed your cookies from Google. But in any case, there's a lot of things to do, but the location deviation you can do with VPN is interesting.
Yeah, and you have to find a VPN provider that is more trustworthy than Verizon and AT&T. Yeah, that's
I could do that in my sleep.
Yeah.
Well, and we'll have links to some sources for that, won't we?
That's right.
At geekspeak.org. So take a look
And
for
one
that.
More pedantic note, just because we're GeekSpeak and we have to have the geek cred, TLS, not SSL.
Yes. SSL is the common name because that was the original name. It's actually been replaced with TLS, but when you go and look for a cert, you're normally looking for an SSL cert, even though it's really a TLS cert. There, I've got cred too.
I always think SSL Space Sciences Lab because that's where Daddy worked.
Aww. That's kind of cool.
I don't even know what the other SSL is. All right. So particle collider.
Yes. Usually the particle colliders are 17 miles long in the case of CERN, or they are 49 miles long in the case of a super collider that China just
you got a good voice for
is,
that
is yeah, suggesting of making it. Yeah, they haven't made that.
Oh,
that'll
they're
be
still
really
in the works. Right. Well, now are they going to bother? Because apparently you don't need all that space.
Right. Whereas the United States has a new particle collider that is under 12 inches long.
But that's just a test. Okay.
There's so many jokes I'm just not going to tell right now.
Mm-hmm.
So how is that even possible? If they're talking about 17 miles and 49 miles, how is a foot even possible?
So traditional linear accelerators have a whole bunch of magnetic fields, and as the charged particles, normally they throw protons through this thing, they produce a railgun effect where they turn the magnet on ahead of it and turn the magnet on ahead of it. And as you pulse those magnets, you can get the things to be pulled through or pushed through by a magnetic field.
It's kind of like pulling something by attaching a rubber band and just running with a rubber band, except that it's magnetic and... Right. That's why you need such a long...
And so what you do is that pulsing causes you to be able to make the particles go faster and faster. If you want them to go faster and faster and faster, though, you have to space the magnets out. You have to have more of the magnets. You have to have a larger accelerator. Mm-hmm. So the larger the accelerator, traditionally, the faster you get the particles. The faster you get the particles, the more energy you can get, the deeper into the universe you can inspect. Yeah. So that's the general concept.
Yeah, you suck out all the air, make sure it's a vacuum. You send particles through there, and then each time it goes past a magnet, it gives it a little nudge, so it goes a little bit faster. Then it goes past the next magnet.
So this nudge, group in Menlo Park at the ESLAC National Accelerator Laboratory.
Menlo Park's like right over the hill.
It's right here. You could go visit them.
Yeah.
What they've done is they're saying the other way to look at this is find some other way to accelerate particles. And if you could do it in a more efficient way or different way, you potentially could go faster with shorter distances, which would be really cool. Yeah. And they're taking advantage of a thing called the plasma wake field. And that is the wake of plasma, and meaning the front edge, leading edge of that, can actually go faster than the electromagnetic ring methodology. Huh. That's what they're looking into. So they've got a test case of about 12 inches. Is that right? Miles knows his length. So I think it was 12 inches.
That's so... Cool.
So now, if you took the traditional form where you'd have to, like, 50-kilometer-long thing, you can now make that in 5 kilometers instead, which is really exciting. Right. Very different way of doing it. And, of course, we're kind of starting from ground zero on this.
That was one of the quotes, although they were talking about accelerating particles 500 times faster than traditional methods. So they're saying from a practical matter, 50 to 5, but it's possible to have bigger gains than that.
Right.
So you might not need an Olympic swimming pool. You just might need one of those little indoor endless swimming pools.
I think that instead of having a multi-mile long thing, you'd have a mile long thing, right? Because, CERN is almost 50 miles long.
So hold on, gang. A mile is still a lot longer than 12 inches.
Yes, this is just a test phase. I mean that you can build a linear accelerator in 2 feet with 2 magnets. Just the particles aren't going to get very fast. It's not going to be that fun. Yeah, you can still maybe fry a cat, but other than that, it's not going to do anything.
The energy required,
that would be startling.
Nice callback on the cats, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, don't fry cats.
The energy required to push these things faster and faster is still required. You still need a huge amount of energy to do this. But the fact that you don't have to have this huge tube that's evacuated of all matter that's cooled usually to
as
very
much,
core
right. temperatures. Like those magnets have to be really cold. Yeah.
So to actually do all of this over multiple kilometers or tens of kilometers is really expensive just on the overhead, even before you get to the point where you're trying to accelerate things. So anything that makes that more compact is going to add to other.
And it's really exciting, of course, because though we could keep making larger and larger accelerators, the amount of time it took to build the CERN and the amount of engineering, and then they had some problems with coolant system, and therefore they had a leak inside their main chamber and they had to evacuate the whole thing. We're talking about a year to get the thing back online just because of a leak. So anything that can make the system a little less complicated than the most complicated machine on the planet ever made by man, which is the CERN, it would be good to have a new type of technology. So it's just kind of a new way of looking at it. It might not be – we might see another really long one first.
Yeah, I wonder if China's going to go, well, never mind. We're going to stop
anyway.
Building.
We know how to work it.
Yeah, they're going to do it anyway. Huh. Fascinating. Well, okay, so I wonder how that plugs into the general cognitive thing where, if we don't like the solution to something, we just deny that there's a problem.
Yeah, it turns out that solution aversion, as they're calling it, does exist. So this is out of a study from Duke University, and they did 3 experiments to figure out why, or rather to figure out if people can, let me rephrase this. Here's a quote from the study. The goal is to test in a scientifically controlled manner the question, does the desirability of a solution affect the belief in the existence of the associated problems? So, for example, climate change, for example, you'll
that's
find
the
that.
Big one, right?
Yeah, well, that's one of, yeah, certainly. So you'll find that conservatives tend to disagree that climate change exists with liberals.
Some conservatives.
Yeah.
Conservatives.
Some people. So you'll find that conservatives tend to not be as okay with the solution to climate change or potential solutions for climate change as liberals may be. For example, a tax on carbon emissions, you know? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So something like that actually can affect whether they believe in the problem itself. So mm-hmm. Another way of putting it is there's this cognitive dissonance, right?
Yeah.
And
if I can't even grok the solution you're proposing because it's so counter to how I
what you
order
want to
the
do.
Universe in my mind, I might go, I deny that there's even a problem there.
Well, let's back up because not everyone may be familiar with the term cognitive dissonance.
Yeah.
So that's – cognitive dissonance is where
– you have two competing notions in your head. Neither of them – they cannot both be right.
And so one of them has to be wrong.
There's that dissonance in your cognitive, in your brain, right?
And that causes kind of a freeze, doesn't it? Like,
you got to resolve it somehow,
right? And you have to choose. And in general, that choice becomes which one is going to make me feel better,
rather than which one is actually correct.
It's not a conscious choice.
I mean that in the terms of like a subconscious choice, your brain has to go one way or the other,
right.
whether to accept it or not.
It's a passive least resistance.
So this study talks about the emotion being higher impact rather than potentially a better argument.
I don't know if I would sum it up that way, but generally speaking, yes. So basically, it seems that there are two ways to resolve the cognitive dissonance with something like, there's all this scientific evidence, let's say, for climate change, but I don't like the solution.
So this is a little bit more about solution rather than belief.
Okay, so the three issues that they tested in these three experiments were climate change, air pollution that harms lungs, and crime. And so there's a problem. Here's a potential solution. Now, do you believe in the problem is basically what they were doing.
I see.
And so they found that –
So the complex
– You can imagine that there are two ways.
The dislike of the solution causes a fault of the problem's existence.
The way I see it is there are two ways to resolve this cognitive dissonance of like, yeah, here's a problem. I hate the solution. How do I resolve this cognitive dissonance of these two opposing viewpoints? One would be I'm going to change my viewpoint and accept the solution more readily. Uh-huh. And humans are change averse, right? Or two is I could plug my ears and go la 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 la. And just ignore the problem and actually maybe even argue that the problem doesn't exist. With
that
what logic?
Like a political person.
I don't need logic. Right.
Didn't we already know that happens, though?
Yeah,
I mean, this sounds like one of those studies that follow up on a thing that we kind of know already.
Well, I was actually thinking not enough people know it happens. And I don't –
yeah,
I actually don't want to pick on conservatives that much, even though I think that people who deny climate change are dumb. But if you –
That sounds like you're picking up.
Yeah.
But it happens everywhere. It happens to everyone. Mm-hmm. Everyone has a blind spot. It could be people that believe that everything has an energy force and you can focus it through crystals. And so science
– Do you want to choose more of these so you can alienate more of our audience?
Sure.
Because you're welcome
so when
to
you
do
look
that.
At, but when you look at
– Let's talk about nuclear energy, shall we?
Right. But when you look at the physics of it, you go like, no, that doesn't happen. That can't happen. And so someone has to make that choice of do I still accept that people have an energy force in this way that can be focused by crystals or is physics wrong? And so many people will just say like, well, I have to choose one in their brain. I absolutely must have the crystals. Therefore, physics must be fundamentally flawed.
Yeah. So this is actually addressed in the article here. They found that liberal-leaning individuals also exhibited a similar vision to solutions they viewed as politically undesirable. That was the experiment involving violent home break-ins. So they did an experiment there. They found that liberal-leaning individuals had the same thing. And one of the quotes actually is, we should not just view some people or some group as anti-science, anti-fact, or hyper-scared of any problems.
It's a human thing that's happening.
It's something that's baked into us, human you know, beings. As human beings.
So the solution is to question why you make decisions that you make and always wonder if you're doing it wrong.
Well, the thing is human beings are going to do that.
Yeah.
Me
too.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean you, the everybody that's listening.
Yeah.
Me specifically.
Like, okay. Yeah, definitely.
Yes.
Especially Miles.
I knew Miles was like
But at the same time, this is why the scientific method came about, and this is why it has been so successful, is that
it's been a good check for what our brains tend to do to us.
It's how do you isolate that human bias?
So speaking of human bias, though, Miles, your next story is perfectly in line with this, right? It's the same discussion.
About kids?
About Facebook.
Oh, about Facebook.
Yeah.
What about Facebook?
Well, Facebook, the thing is, users can't seem to tell the difference between Facebook and some scams that have showed up on Facebook.
Oh, you mean like advertisements that look Facebook-y and you click on them and then you're in some kind of advertiser site so they can take money from you?
Well, things that are...
Is that like the how to change your background color thing that I've been seeing
around?
Yes,
things like that. How to tweak Facebook or how to get some special thing or those ones that are saying here's this trick that has educators angry because you'll learn how to speak a language in no time flat.
Now isn't that just because the folks who are putting that together are doing a good job of aping the Facebook look?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's actually something that people have brought up, is saying people can't tell the difference between Facebook items,
legitimate Facebook features.
Yeah, and scams, because the legitimate Facebook features are scams. No,
the whole thing's a scam.
You mean because of the complexity? I mean, I was associating
the reason why Facebook is so compelling is because it taps into certain aspects of the human psyche to interact with others, to tweak with things, to be interactive.
To engage in a group.
To engage, yes. Yep. And a scam is useless if it doesn't engage anyone.
Right.
The whole point of a scam is to engage. So they are dovetailing quite nicely.
So you're saying that the users that get really into Facebook, if they're led from that perspective of the benefits of participation and sharing and all that, is a perfect audience for scams. And the only thing that scammers have to do is make it look like Facebook, which is complicated enough that it's hard to discern if it's Facebook or not. That's kind of what the story's about?
Yeah.
Okay.
So what about
How do they solve that?
Yeah. So then what?
That's a fun question. And that actually is a long-standing question with regard to marketing, is how do you tell the difference between just a little puffery or giving information out to people or versus – actual emotional manipulation, which gets people to buy the item.
Now, this might be a thing where, because it's affecting so many people, there might be some hope of people working on a real solution, right? If the scams are hitting everyone,
it becomes costly and
gets worse.
Well, it's going to affect Facebook's bottom line, right? I mean, people's machines are being taken over, things of that nature.
There's always going to be a give and take. Like I said, this is an age-old question. This is something that has to do with marketing in general. If you look at any book on marketing and they talk about the different ways of getting people on board, like the bandwagon effect and stuff like that, they are a one-to-one representation to looking at your philosophy logic textbook that talks about logical fallacies. The reason they work is because the human mind accepts them.
Right. Taking advantage of the bad qualities of our ability to be human.
But it is also the general direction that marketing is going when we're having sort of product placement embedded within entertainment. That's the sort of embedding of the advertisement.
But where it's going, like, I mean, isn't that what a Saturday morning cartoon was when we were growing up?
Yeah.
Embedding all of the toy
marketing
in the middle of it.
Sugar cereals, man.
But it's just becoming, like, people are putting up less and less with the standalone ad. We'll just ignore it. So in a way, you could argue that people are trying to get your attention have to kind of sneak in and camouflage themselves as the thing you mean to be looking at.
Yeah.
But I don't think this trend is going to reverse, is what I'm saying.
Where does the scam and the ad line come, right? Where is it a legitimate email and when is it spam? When is it an ad? When is it a scam? The line is defined by the person that's doing it, right?
I guess so.
And the user that decides not to click on it.
Yeah, and many people are good actors. They're just saying, hey, I think that I have a great product and I want to get it out to as many people as possible. And there are other people that are like, how do I get the dollars?
Seems like Facebook's got to really start triggering this. Like, if they're using the Facebook kind of look and feel on a targeted location, it should highlight that somehow. Change it all to pink or something.
Right, but how would...
It's hard. I know.
Yeah, being able to identify that is a hard problem. Yeah.
Well, we're going to talk more about the struggles of trying to apply logic in this modern world. It's Geek Speak here on KUSP, and we're talking about just sort of the struggles of continuing to be made of meat in a continually cyber world. On that note, EFF recently ranked a bunch of services for their utility.
Yeah.
Looking for privacy.
Yeah, that's right. EFF is the Electronic Frontier Foundation. It's a nonprofit organization that's trying to make sure that we have freedoms in a digital world. And mm-hmm. it's a really important role, especially in the legality issues, that you have to have lawyers to fight things of this nature. So they regularly will rank different services based on the freedom kind of qualities that they like. So recently they have a secure messaging scoreboard. We hear a lot about your communication being tapped in by outside listeners, NSA or other people. And a lot of people get drawn to a service because of the touting security of it. And therefore they use that because they feel like their communication is private. And so this ranking is basically a inspection of how these systems work and a checkbox. And here are some of the different traits they looked at. Encrypted in transit is one of them. Encrypted so provider can't read it. Now, this means when you encrypt something, only the two people that have keys can read it. Mm-hmm. Some of these services, they're the ones that get the communication from you, Bonnie. They encrypt it to them. Then they unencrypt it. Then they encrypt it again for Miles. So theoretically, they could read it. Mm-hmm. The service provider, Facebook or Twitter, whatever. Well, not Twitter, but messaging
services.
If they
encrypt, they could unencrypt.
Yes. And there's other ones as too. Can you verify the contact's identity? Meaning, if you think you're talking to Miles, are you sure you're talking to Miles? Mm. And that is a problem because if you don't do that well, Ben could be the one you're talking to and he's talking to Miles, and that's a man-in-the-middle attack. You never really know it. So identity is important. So of all these different services they looked at, there's a lot of them, the big boys are just not doing it. AIM, forget it. Every check marks except for one is succeeding. There's, by the way, there's seven of these different check marks. The last one has the code been audited? And that one's really interesting because even though they tout a technology and a feature set, it's possible there's a bug in the system and someone could take advantage of that bug. We saw that actually a lot in Snowden's releases, that NSA actually takes advantage of a bug. Uh-huh. So even though the protocol looks great, there's a major flaw in it that no one knew about.
And that kind of sounds like that's what's happening with Apple lately in their iCloud stuff.
Yeah, right. Apple had a problem, definitely. So if you look through this list, I'll just mention some of the ones that are common. Facebook chat. This is the chatting protocol by Facebook. Mm-hmm. They are as bad as AIM. They have two greens. They have encrypted in transit, and they also has the code has been audited. It means there's probably not bugs because other people have looked at it. So those are, it's pretty good. It's not a very good, you know, they're doing a lot of things wrong. Facebook couldn't read your messages. We kind of know this because they're offering advertising features, so
right.
They want to know what you're talking about. If you're talking about shoes, they want to give advertising about shoes, right? So that's one of the reasons they might want to do that. Google Hangouts, chat, even though off the record version is bad, just as bad as Facebook. Some of the ones that are good are ones you haven't heard about, unfortunately.
Oh.
Fully green across the board would be Signal/Red Phone, Silent Phone, Silent Text. These, you can verify the identity. It's totally encrypted. The inner person can't read it. If these keys are taken by some future time, the private keys are taken by somebody mm-hmm. in the future, you still cannot read old messages because there's a perfect secrecy privacy thing.
And who provides those ones that we don't know about?
Well, they're these small companies. They just haven't taken off. You know, the trouble, of course, is that the companies that do a good job of making money in their store and spreading the word, the popular ones, have some model that can make money. Mm-hmm. And if you remove the ability to look at the message, you can't do advertising. So there's some flaws in this scenario.
It's like sustainability flaws.
Yeah, yeah. Microsoft's one has some good flags. They're greens in a couple of them. They can't read your message directly, mm-hmm. But they haven't been audited, so we don't really know because it's a closed source system. So, mm-hmm. any case, this whole secure messaging scoreboard provided by the EFF. If you're concerned about this kind of thing and you want to know how much your data can be inspected on, this is the kind of thing you need to have. Access to. Mm-hmm. So I'm really glad the EFF sped it up, and it'll be linked at geekspeak.org.
We'll put it up at geekspeak.org. And I don't know, maybe we can link also to some of those green across the board services.
The problem with these green across the board is you have to choose one, and then your people you want to text to also have to choose it.
Oh, okay.
So it becomes a little more difficult to use it. So what I think is beneficial is that the companies that are providing this get a flag, you know, hey, mm-hmm. Yahoo, you're doing it wrong. And they look and go, hey, how can we get greener on some of these marks? So the visibility to me is more important that everybody moves towards these feature sets rather than you should start using it right away. Because the truth is, I don't care if people really read my messages most of the time, right? A few of these check marks. But in general, if the society was more private, benefits everybody.
Okay. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So we'll link to that up at geekspeak.org. And you can see how well the service you use ranks.
Right on.
Okay, so more on the subject of, you know, just trying to be an effective piece of meat in this world. kids wanting to learn science and then quitting early. Why are they quitting early, Miles?
Well, this it's funny because this goes along with a cognitive biases as well.
Right.
Cognitive dissonance.
We're filled with them.
We have this notion in our society, and this is not just kids, this is in general, that the people who are doing science are smart, and if I don't consider myself smart enough, then I shouldn't even bother trying to get
eligible into science. For science.
Right.
Okay.
And so that's what a professor of psychology at Stanford University found, is that many kids quit science because they just don't think that they're smart or smart enough.
Now, that is interesting because although there are some sort of high calculations and things going on, a lot of science is following the scientific method. And if you follow the scientific method, results happen.
Which one of its fundamental presets is you're not as smart as you think you are.
Yeah.
It's one of the goals of the using. Yeah.
But as a side thing, praising their intelligence can actually make the kids feel more insecure.
Oh, because I know that doesn't feeling. Square with my experience. You're calling me smart, but I don't feel smart. Therefore, I don't trust what you're telling me.
Yeah, very much. Mm. And this is very much like what we were just talking about earlier. Right, of saying, yeah. Hey, you said this one thing. I already believe this other thing. I need to reconcile them. I deny that your opinion is correct, which means that you're just making stuff up about me, and I'm really messed up.
Hmm.
So could the solution to this be saying, look, people are really stupid. So if you feel stupid, don't worry about it. That's normal.
No,
is that good? I'm trying to get parenting tips here.
I've got one.
Not being a parent myself, but I know from my work out there in the world doing conflict resolution stuff that it doesn't work so much to say you're nice or be smart, but to say, you know, when you followed these protocols really well, you got a good result. Good job. Like being specific about the behavior or the action that was effective and praising that. Because then anyone could see, yes, I did that action and I did get a good result.
And then it's
so
really hard.
Believe what you're telling me.
Right. And therefore, you're also not causing a cognitive deficit. You're not saying you're smart. You're saying, hey, you did a good job on this specific thing, which they can, of course, enforce because they understand
themselves.
That.
This is similar to things I've seen for students with regard to math. Is that you don't say someone is good at math or bad at math.
You said they solved a problem well.
Well, that, and you also, you don't say like, oh, well, some people are just naturally better at math.
Okay.
Like, you go, math takes time. It takes effort. It's just like if you want to be in good shape, you have to go out and run all the time and practice and build up your muscles.
Yeah.
You can't just suddenly be
a good runner.
Yeah. And the same thing with math and the same thing with science. They are things that take people many years to get through a basic undergraduate education in these things. Like they take the time, they take the effort. And it's about telling people you need to go through the effort.
Huh. That seems like a good lesson for today's world.
As opposed to it's not because you're dumb that you didn't get the problem. It's because these things are hard, and they require effort, and you need to buckle down and spend some time with it.
Okay. Well, I like that solution. It's just encouraging the idea that effort is a thing that yields results.
Yeah. The first time I started programming, it was a slog. I was having a hard time. It was getting your mental model switched over to that. Now, I can't imagine not thinking in this way. But
it's become natural.
But I have this distant memory of, wow, I had trouble figuring out how the for loop worked. I can't understand that anymore. But
I remember that.
Yeah.
I was like yesterday. No, I'm kidding.
So what I'm hearing is that we're not all a bunch of lazy geeks. We've already just done a lot of work.
Mm.
Is that what I'm hearing?
You know, also if the work...
We weren't born knowing it. It isn't innate.
You didn't pop out saying this stuff.
Yeah.
If the work feels like play, then it doesn't. You don't think of it as work.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't think of it as difficult. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if there's a way to enjoy, if you can enjoy math, then you don't have to work so much to get good at math. I mean, you're doing the same stuff. Right. Other people might call it work, but for you it's play. For you it's fun. That's what programming is for me, and that's why I'm much better at programming than I am at, say, literature analysis. Like, I'm horrible at that, and probably the reason is because, for whatever reason, it wasn't as fun for me in school. Maybe I was, you know, dissuaded, or I don't know.
Yeah. Huh. I pushed a button, everything became different, but I'm going to keep going on the show with anyway.
All right.
So I could use just like a little quick bobble. In 30 seconds, let's talk about the new Star Wars movie.
I got a bobble. Star Wars movie. I don't know. I want a new Star Trek movie, but I'll take Star Wars.
All right.
Star Wars Episode 7. That's okay. VII 7.
Is that the title? I think we knew that was the title already.
The episode, Star Wars Episode 7, VII. No, it's called The Force Awakens.
The Force Awakens.
Yes, and that is the announcement.
The Force got cranky. It needed to take a nap. And
now it's awakened and it's refreshed.
Has the Force been sleeping? Yeah.
The Force was in deep sleep before this. Okay,
so
interesting.
I don't know. I'm looking forward to it.
It's about people's relationship to the Force.
I'm curious.
I'm excited about it.
I'm curious if there will be too many visual effects for my taste. I really like visual effects
like,
a lot.
Lens flare?
Mm-hmm. Lens flare.
That director never does that, though.
What are you talking about?
J.J. Abrams, what? I don't know. I love visual effects, but
I think
that they should only...
Do you think of lens flares when you think of J.J. Abrams? Does like, they just come in your mind every single
time? It does now,
it does
yeah.
to me.
Yeah.
Every time I see it, I see his text of his name, and then I see a lens flare on it.
Yeah, it's
sorry,
just
saying,
I see
Beth.
Three lens flares. Actually, and they're moving.
You were saying?
Oh, I was just saying that I love visual effects, mm-hmm. but they need to be justified.
Complimentary.
They need to be complementing the story.
Yeah.
And amen, that's something that we didn't see with The Phantom Menace. Best title ever. Not. sorry. Wow, I'm really pessimistic about this today.
That was longer than 30 seconds. Moving on.
I don't know. We'll see. We've got another year or approximately another year.
Yeah.
Post-production takes a long time when you got a lot of visual effects.
It does. I think that takes more time than the actual filming these days. Apps, EFF rated texting apps.
We did that one, yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. And so now there's also a mobile justice app. What's that?
Yeah, I saw that. What is that?
Okay, so the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union.
Another cool organization.
A very cool organization, of course. A more traditional freedom-supporting kind of organization. Has produced an app. This is the Oregon branch. And the app is the mobile justice app. And you guys have all seen videos, kind of shot videos of police detaining people or arresting people, right? And sometimes there's some qualities in the arrest that don't feel right and you don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
So the general idea of this app is to support people documenting what police are doing so that it can be part of the public record. So here is the executive director of the ACLU of Oregon, David Fincoy, saying, this is a quote, "Police officers have a unique role and position within our society, and they are given extraordinary powers. Oregonians. Yeah, people from Oregon. I can't even say that.
Oregonians.
Yeah,
okay,
I think
Oregonians.
It is.
Sure. Have the right to record video of police in public places as a check to those powers. So the general idea is that people will use this app. The thing that's clever about this app is that normally when you do a video recording, it's on your phone and you can just delete it.
Mm-hmm.
This app actually records it and then updates it as soon as possible. Even if you go away from the app and you try to stop it, it does continue the upload process.
Ooh.
So that's part of the idea of it.
Okay.
It's Android only now. I'm sure they'll work on the iOS version.
It's only on Android. Okay.
That's right. And of course, they're also giving some very clear directions on how and when to use this. But there are a few different feature sets, right? So of what they say in the list of things to use. First, you say, announce that you're reaching for your phone, because of course that's important. Because if you're not, then something bad could happen. Announce that you're attempting to access the app to record the exchange. If the officer forbids or prevents you from doing so, do not argue or resist. Follow the officer's instructions. If your rights have been violated, your attorney will argue your case later. So the idea being that do everything you can to be exactly correct in how you should interact. Even if they choose to do something unlawful, don't argue with it. Just note it and then later tell your attorney, and that will probably be used in court. But the four different parts of the app, it records things. It can witness, so it gives individuals the option to alert nearby people of an event so that you can go and witness it by hand. So if you have the app running and you turn on the locality, if somebody starts recording an incident, it'll notify people in the area that the incident's happening so the other people can come together. Because, of course, the more eyes on something, the more truth will emerge, hopefully.
Yeah.
You can also report after the event happens. You can really document exactly what it is, like what the incident was like. I was detained for this, or they pulled me over for this, and I was searched, whatever it was, an entire report that also goes to the ACLU. So easier access for citizens to kind of share with the ACLU what's happening, I think, is a good way to go about ensuring justice in our society.
Right. Huh.
When you don't actually spend the money to put the video cameras onto the officers themselves and just
Which would be better.
Yes.
Hello.
Yeah.
All-time monitoring of what of police officers while they're on duty see. Why not? It would be really easy to do. It's cheap. I think
in the places where it's been done, the number of police
It's been a big reduction, right?
Yeah, the number of people complaining about police has dropped dramatically, and the number of charges leveled against police.
It may be effective in police self-policing.
You know, right, but it's also effective with regard to citizens. If they know that they're being photographed, they're not going to
relax a little bit more.
Inclined to do
right, everybody starts playing nicer when you get a camera rolling.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I got to say that I want to just really, for we talk a lot about the kind of the bad cases of police and technology interaction on GeekSpeak, in law enforcement in general doing technically bad decisions from our judgment. I just want to say that I know that police work is a very hard job, and I appreciate that people are doing it. I wouldn't want to be a police officer. I think it's extremely hard to be in that position. And when you're a police officer, you have such a burden of responsibility to be appropriate and act correctly. And I know that the people you deal with every day are not necessarily the best type of people to deal with.
Yeah, but in a context where you're not being treated well a
lot
of
you're being
the time.
Treated badly.
Yeah.
And I salute you for when you actually do the right thing. Please try to do the right thing all the time and be kind of like Superman, you know. It's a difficult job.
It's a tough one.
Or Wonder Woman, I guess. Also, the other thing that app does is know your rights. And it's just a list of all these different rights that you have in the United States. So there you go. Mobile Justice is the name of the app.
Mobile Justice. All right. And so we'll link to that also at geekspeak.org. Well, that's it. That's GeekSpeak for today. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence and is used with permission. And GeekSpeak is Creative Commons Attribution 3.0, which means reuse our stuff any way you like. Just tell them the geeks say hi. This is Public Radio for the Central Coast, 88.9 KOSP Santa Cruz, live online at KOSP.org. To find out more about this or any episode of GeekSpeak, please visit us at geekspeak.org. And today's theme music is Michael Newman's Pet Star Music. I'm Bonnie Jean Brims with Lyle Smiles and Ben. Thank you for being here for our November 8th episode of GeekSpeak in 2014. Cheers.